Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, welcome back, and I'm going to dive into this interview. I've been telling you about this, and I don't get a chance to interview a lot of people, and a lot of times it's very rare that, you know, people will be willing to come on, because most of the people that we would love to come on, they don't understand the Constitution. They don't want to talk about the Constitution. They don't care about the Constitution. So it's a breath of fresh air to find when a politician, and I'll just say a politician of the caliber of Michelle Bachmann. Now, I've made some insinuations, and as a matter of fact, I've been asking you, the audience, what kind of president does America need? And so one of the things that we need to get our arms around is, do we want a leader or do we want a manager? Because a manager is going to, you know, give you an agenda, and that agenda, 9 times out of 10, never has anything to do with the Constitution. And if we have a leader, then we will actually have somebody, especially if they want to understand what they have to do as a leader. Because let's differentiate. A manager does things right. In other words, whatever they need to do, whatever their agenda is, they're going to cross the T's, dot the I's, and they're going to follow the process of what they need to do. A leader does the right thing. And so it's hard to find leaders today. Trump has not been a leader. Trump has really been more of a manager. And I say that because look at all the things he's done. He's managed stuff, but a true leader that actually takes the oath of office as the president of the United States to faithfully execute the laws of the union, then I see that a true leader would then understand what they're supposed to do, and I believe a true leader would actually lead this country back into a, you know, into reforming, actually not even reforming, back into getting the states to push the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution, because that's what has to happen. The federal government will never get back into the framework of the Constitution on its own. It requires the states to do it. That's why the one thing Obama said that was spot on, you can't change Washington, D.C. from within Washington, D.C. You have to go external. And the true elixir in getting them, draining the swamp, actually obliterating the swamp, and displacing all of government would be by following the Constitution and having a presidential leader going out to all the states, lecturing them and poking them in the eye and pointing your finger of judgment upon them and saying, look, you know, we're in this mess because of you. And I, as the president, will hold back my army of bureaucracy and allow you to be unfettered in basically coalescing and uniting on the Constitution. That's what we needed as a president, period. That's what we need. I can't tell you enough how having a president that would embrace the Constitution is what America needs at that office. Now, bottom line, we don't see that in Trump. I think, and as a matter of fact, I won't even think, I'll even go there. I believe that Michelle Bachmann would be, if she would get into this race, and she would get into this race with one fundamental platform, compliance to the Constitution, the platform that we've been harping on. The whole point of government is to comply to the Constitution. As I've spoken, our government is a self-government, is an immune system. That we, the people, are an integral part of that immune system, that whenever anything that is being done that is unconstitutional, everybody who is, and every U.S. citizen is under the oath of a citizen. In other words, even though you may not have to take it, that's the problem. We all need to start taking the oath of a citizen so that we understand that we're equally responsible to protect and defend the Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic. And so every citizen has a responsibility to attack anything foreign going into our government, anything that it's doing that is not copacetic, that is not in compliance with the Constitution. Just imagine where we would be if we were actually holding them accountable using First Amendment petitions. I could go on and on and on because you hear me do this all the time. Bottom line is, we're going to have Michelle Bachmann on. I want you to listen to, and as a matter of fact, I left it to her to ruminate on what we need to do with these polities or these treaties to these foreign polities. So I'm going to send her an email to go back and say, I'd like to now get your feedback on what we need to do regarding all of these treaties that we've created that have been unconstitutional, subjugating the United States to the governing bodies of the UN and all these other bodies that we've basically created treaties with, that power does not exist. It's one thing to have a treaty over trade. It's one thing to have a treaty over ending a war, but we cannot subjugate. The federal government has never been delegated that authority to subjugate us. So I'm hoping to have her back. I know she's very busy. But more importantly, I'd like to plant the idea with you. I'd like to plant the idea with America that we need a constitutional leader. And as far as I'm concerned, especially somebody that, you know, I don't want to divorce their Christianity from the office, but somebody that doesn't want to create a theology, because our government was never meant to be that way. Our government was to embrace all people who embrace individual liberty and individual sovereignty and support them and make sure that their inalienable rights, all of their inalienable rights, are protected. As long as they're not trying to inflict, like Islam is trying to inflict, you know, what you can buy, what you can't buy, what you can do, and all of these things are not harmonious. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about this with Michelle, because she's actually stood up on these issues throughout her career. I mean, I think America really missed the opportunity when we looked at who was in the race for presidency, because I believe she was in the race in 2012, and unfortunately, you know, she did not win the primary. But bottom line, what we're going to do is, as I wrap up, you know, because I'll go get back to this, we're going to go out to break, and then we're going to have a promo, and then we'll come back from break and do the interview, and then we'll go back out to break, and that's, you know, do another promo, and then we'll come back, and I'll do a wrap-up. And so it's kind of a short, you know, I'm not going to be talking as much in a monologue like I am now, but you know me, it's hard for me to, you know, not talk a lot. I guess God made me for radio. But anyway, I want you to think about this. I really want you to start thinking about who should be president. And we need to have a very open and loud conversation, because after this interview and moving in towards the election, I am going to start stating the case how Trump does not need to be, nor should he ever be, our president again. I think he was a stopgap, and unfortunately, because he was that stopgap, he caused this problem for the progressives to pursue and absolutely obtain the office, because he didn't know what he was doing. You know, he had 4 years to tighten up and clean up our election process. And the whole time he started running from his first election to when he was removed from office unconstitutionally. I mean, the whole time he kept on saying it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged, right? I mean, he's been using that phraseology. He had time to clean it all up. He had 4 years, folks. Really? This man deserves another term and another shot? America needs better. And America deserves better, especially those of us who want to save our Constitution. Don't think that we're outnumbered by the Bolsheviks. Those are all inflated numbers. As a matter of fact, I really doubt that they even came close to 50 million votes. That's how illegitimate. If you go back to the 2012 election, I've done this before, I've proven that there was easily 20 to 30 million illegitimate votes in the election of Obama over Romney. Now, all things being considered, as we do this interview, and again, we'll be back for a final segment after the interview, but think about who is deserving and what would be the best type of president for America. We need to really start focusing on those who are willing to serve. I'd love to have Paul Venable as president. I really would. But we need to get him in office, and we need to get his, you know, his name out there, so that at least people can say, wow, we can follow this person. and we can follow Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann, Paul Venable, there's the ticket. Anyway, we'll be right back after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Folks, we have Michelle Bachmann. And as a matter of fact, Dean Bachmann, which I forgot to ask you, which do you prefer to be called?
It's up to you. You can call me Michelle. You can call me Dean Bachmann. You can call me Congressman, whatever you'd like.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to actually take this interview. The reason I really wanted to have this interview is because you're one of the very few that has been in the public eye. And as a matter of fact, you've never been given the credentials of your constitutional positions. And I don't know why that is, other than the fact that I believe that the progressives have been very good in obfuscating, you know, who, you know, people are, because they like to highlight Ted Cruz as, you know, this constitutional person, and they hate him, but they give him some level of credentials where you never got those. And so you were making some comments regarding some treaties and so forth. And I know, understanding the Constitution and understanding the enumerated powers, these contracts, or I should say these treaties that America has entered into, has been all a facade, because there's been no delegated authority for the federal government to be able to regulate or even enter into treaties over these things. And so how do you believe America can actually move forward? And I know you're not really ready for this, but what I'd like to do is, some of these questions, I'd like to reserve the opportunity for you to, you know, ruminate, cogitate on, and we can get back as you kind of give it some prayer and thought, because another credential that you get weighed heavily upon is your credentials on Christianity and being a God-fearing person. So, again, let me dive into the some of the positions that you've taken, because when you started off your political career, one of the key issues was the marriage in Minnesota. In other words, marriage for Minnesota. And at that point in time, the whole United States was literally seeing the writing on the wall that the progressives were trying to actually destroy the family unit by actually perverting marriage. So the question...
Go ahead.
So the question is, what drove you to actually lead that charge, marriage for Minnesota?
Well, what drove me was the unconstitutional nature of what the Supreme Judicial Court of the state of Massachusetts was doing. The state level Supreme Court in Massachusetts declared unilaterally that marriage between a man and a woman was unconstitutional. Marriage had to include a legal contract between people of the same sex. That had not been done before in the United States. That was in the year 2003. What they did was bizarre. The state Supreme Court, not the state legislature, made that declaration. They changed law unilaterally.
Right.
And they ordered the state legislature in Massachusetts to pass a law in conformity with the Supreme Court justices' moral and legal opinions.
Right.
Now, that doesn't happen. You don't have a court tell a state legislature, which people who are elected by the people, you must pass a law in conformity with what we want.
Right.
So it completely upended our system of government, where we are bottom up. The people choose the laws they want to live under and the leaders that they want to rule over them. In this case, it was judicial overlords who told the legislature what to do. It so offended my sensibilities and understanding of the Constitution. That's why in Minnesota, I decided to introduce a constitutional amendment to the Minnesota Constitution so that the people of the state could decide what they believe the definition of marriage is. It was their decision, not the decision of a Supreme Court. And of course, this is how progressives work. They continually upend the will of the people and instead look for any inventive action that they can to impose their will on the people.
Yeah, so actually, this goes back to John Marshall during the ratification debates clearly articulated that the court's limitations on jurisdiction fell clearly onto the enumerated powers. In other words, any law that was created or anything that was outside those enumerated powers, the federal courts and the federal government had no jurisdiction over those. So in other words, it couldn't even see the light of day within the federal court system.
And in fact, they should have declared that Congress was without authority
to make
that decision.
And so, interestingly enough, I'm not sure because I happen to, be a history buff, and the first time that the federal government engaged itself in religion, because it first tried to actually stay away from it, was with the Mormons. And so, I looked at the history.
Are you talking about having Utah become a state?
The polygamy issue.
They were told that the Supreme Court told Utah, you can't become a state until you outlaw polygamy.
Right. So, in other words, they were exerting some powers that they didn't have in the Constitution. But here's the irony. Earlier, when the Mormons were being persecuted, they actually made an appeal to the federal government and said, hey, look, you got to protect us. We have these religious rights. And they said, that's not within our enumerated powers. We don't have the power to do that. And it was literally like 30 or 40 years later where the federal government, finally took up this charge of going after them and now, overreaching their bounds. Another thing I wanted to get into, because this is right in the forefront, but I believe it was very early in your career in Congress that there was this issue regarding the Cost Reduction Act for student loans and so forth. And you actually became, I would just say, a firebrand at that point in trying to stand up for what was constitutional. Now, as we see today, there's actually a direct correlation, and I believe you were on the right track in the right direction on that particular issue. And as you see what's going on with the Biden administration, first off, he has no legislative authority or power. And the fact that he's going down this path of trying to lead and guide the violations of the Constitution, is clearly treasonous. But what do you believe needs to happen regarding these student loans and this big problem, this albatross?
Well, I will tell you, this is a huge affront to every single American, because what people need to understand is that the student loan issue originates as a contract. It is a contract between the person taking out the loan and the person that they're taking the loan from. Prior to Obamacare's passage in 2010, I believe, 2009, 2010, 80% of all student loans originated privately. People went to a private bank and they got their student loan. After Obamacare, by design, the Obama administration wanted the federal government to become the national bank for all student loans because they knew they could then politicize student loans. So that's what the whole purpose was. That in itself was an unconstitutional action on their part. There is no constitutional basis for the United States government to be the backer of student loans. That being said, it is important that people understand that a student loan is very unique in all loans in U.S. federal tax law. I'm a former federal tax attorney myself, and I worked once for the United States Department of Treasury. It is a very unique loan. It is the one loan that cannot be discharged by an individual in bankruptcy. So if you're not paying back your student loan, that student loan, by law, traveled with you until you took your last breath on earth. You could never get rid of it. You always had this obligation. So this is an absolutely unique fiction that the Biden administration came up with,
right,
arrogating to themselves powers that they do not have,
right,
to violate a private contract and to vitiate that obligation,
right,
that the obligor has to pay back that loan. We should be offended on every level over the student loan action.
Yes. Well, so here's the interesting thing that I think it's imperative to point out, because the Constitution actually does delegate power to the general government regarding bankruptcy law. And so bankruptcy law, it demands that there be a uniform application of bankruptcy throughout the United States. And how is it that these loans themselves do not fall under that uniform bankruptcy law?
Of course it does. And they have violated that. Just like, if you remember, under the Obama administration,
right,
they upended 150 years of bankruptcy law when they gave special favors to the automobile industry, if you remember, regarding secured debt.
Oh, yes,
You had secured creditors who were investors,
yes,
in the automobile industry. And so the Obama administration preferred the union pensions. And so they put the union pensioners first in bankruptcy, violating 150 years of bankruptcy law.
That is correct, yes. Yes, because the bondholders were the ones who contractually were guaranteed
their money. First in line.
That's absolutely
right. First in line to be paid back as creditors. And why? Because they're the ones who put their capital at risk by investing in GM or Chrysler or whomever.
Right. And I have personal friends that were impacted by that because they were bondholders.
Lost their investment.
Everything
was
gone.
They lost their investment, yep, but the pensioners under the union were made whole. So
right,
you can't do that.
Right.
And again, what was the purpose? It was to inject a political outcome, not a legal outcome, not a constitutional outcome. It actually was morally vacuous to deprive people, to steal from people through violating the bankruptcy laws.
Right. Okay, so the next one, and I'm actually making a picture, and you don't know this, but I'll give you this picture of what's going on here. But anyway, so the next one I wanted to bring into, because in your early days in Congress, you were hit with another thing that fell into the same milieu, which was the Wall Street bailout.
Yeah.
And so this industrial or insurance or this corporate welfare that was being levied out, I mean, so I've told my listeners for time and time again that the uniformity clause is very clear, that the federal government has to treat every state equal. They can't remove burdens or they can't lighten burdens for one state and allow other states to actually have to carry the rest of the burden. And when they bailed out New York, first off, they don't have any enumerated power to do that, but they also violated the uniformity clause. And so you were a huge champion against this bailout.
I was. If people remember back, this is when George Bush sent the worst possible messenger to Congress to beg for bailout money. And this had never been done before. This
right.
was unprecedented. Hank Paulson came over to the Republicans in the House of Representatives, who were in the majority at that time. And Hank Paulson basically demanded and just said, you're going to give me a check for $700-800 billion. And then we're going to use that check to give money to banks, big banks, to ensure that they don't fail. Because they said we could destroy the whole American economy if we don't bail out these banks. Well, we'd been doing that, really, in some sense, it wasn't new. Because since the time of Bill Clinton, they had been bailing out banks. Banks that made loans, let's say, to Mexico, and Mexico couldn't repay them. So the federal government would stand in and intervene because various friends of Bill Clinton put pressure on him
right.
to make sure that their businesses didn't fail. So it was essentially privatizing profits for favored businesses and socializing the losses. So the risks were taken by these players in finance. And so the federal government would swoop in and save the neck of these bad, risky bets or loans,
right,
because they had made donations to Bill Clinton or to George Bush or whomever. And so this was only, this became real money. This wasn't $93 million. This wasn't, you know, $500 million. This was now $700 billion. That's when $700 billion was a lot of money.
Right.
And so we were told just hand it over, a blank check.
Right.
There was even included in this was no right of judicial review. Whatever the Bush administration did with that money, fine by them. So they used that money to bail out the banks.
It upended
expectations on Wall Street because it was so breathtaking. So then what did Wall Street realize? It's like a 16-year-old who crashes the car and mom and dad bail him out of jail and buy him a new car and say, son, let's just go a little easy on the pedal in the future. Well, that Wall Street doubled down. Once they got this $700 billion, they knew that they were living in fantasy land.
Right.
They could do anything they wanted to do. All they had to do was keep the donations going to the Democrat Party, keep the donations going to the people they could buy out in the establishment Republican Party, and
right,
they could do anything they wanted, and they would never lose. It'd be heads I win, tails you lose, into the future. And financially, that's what's happened here in America.
Right. So didn't the bailouts actually turn into over $1 trillion? The TARP bailouts
and
all of that?
Oh, yeah. Debt service.
Right. Okay.
By the time you added in debt service, it was over $1 trillion. But hey, what's $1 trillion today? You know, here just this last week, Biden came back from vacation and signed another, $700 billion to give to the phony climate change initiatives and his healthcare initiatives. It was basically, to be honest with you, to hand out money before the election to all of his big donors. He was paying off political debts to his big donor friends,
yep,
who finance all of the election shenanigans.
Yep.
And so it's for all these phony wind and solar and all these things that have,
yep,
never worked without subsidy.
Right. So actually, you bring up a good point, because it is illegal to tamper with elections to be able to buy votes. And so how is it not buying a vote to say, if you vote for me, I'll violate the Constitution and give you health care?
Exactly.
But that's
the game. What you've done is you've just explained the game in D.C. And it didn't just happen.
It's happened
for a long time. Now it's on a massive industrial scale like no one has ever seen.
Right.
And so the amount of money that they're putting on the betting table today, I mean, just last week, another $700 billion,
right,
real money. All these people are doing is they're buying the collapse of America. Because no one can withstand the level of spending that we're under. There's no new money. We know that we're in recession. Productivity is down. We're not creating more wealth to put behind these dollars. As a matter of fact, we're hollowing out the value of those dollars. So they're purchasing the collapse of America within our lifetime, not our children's, not our grandchildren's, within our lifetime. They're purchasing and ensuring the collapse of America.
Right. So a couple of things I wanted to point out, and we can go through these, because I think what I'd like to actually get your opinion on is a lawsuit that's actually sitting in the Supreme Court that originated in the D.C. court. But there's a lawsuit to actually remove the entire Biden administration and demand, because it's Congress that's being sued. Congress on January 6, 2021, violated the Constitution by failing to execute the 12th Amendment. So I can get into that, because we actually have an opportunity right now to remove him, but Congress is failing to do their job. And everybody is trying to silence this conversation regarding this lawsuit and the fact that Congress, you know, really... They created a constitutional crisis, and the blood and the destruction of this nation is on their hands, because they're the ones that could stop this. But let me get into some of the stuff that you've covered before.
Well, privately, you and I had a side conversation,
yes,
before,
mm-hmm,
we began the
Correct.
Recording.
Yes.
And it's that the Constitution though not perfect, is the most perfect document so far produced by the hands of man to constrain the evil tendencies that mankind has. And that's a universal tendency. That's not just America. Yep. That's all people, all places. We tend to be selfish. We tend to not look out for the best interests of others. So that's the wonderful checks and balances system of the Constitution. The Constitution is relatively short. It's straightforward. It's pretty easy to understand. It just says quite basically that our rights come from a creator, from God, and God gives us rights, and then we take a certain, we have rights that are ours just because we're human beings, and then we give a certain amount of our rights to a government so that we can have an ordered society. But government is severely limited and constricted, and we've divided our government into federal, state, local. We've also divided our government into executive, legislative, courts, and the courts can go so far, no more. The legislative can go so far, no more. The executive can go so far, no more. That's the brilliance, that there are limitations on government. The maximum power is with the individual. Right. The limited power is with government. That's been completely upended and turned on its head. And the reason why we have so many problems today in our country is because we aren't exercising the gift that was given to us by the founders of this nation. Right. And instead, we're trying to live under a perversion of that document, and we'll only come up with perverted results.
This is awesome. So let me cover one more thing that you actually, towards the end of your career in Congress, you made some really salient points regarding the Muslim Brotherhood and this penetration of Islam into the United States. And let me preface it with this, because every person that becomes a citizen, you have to be a citizen of the United States before you can actually become an employee of the federal government. And what that means is that you have to take an oath. If you are naturally born, that oath is still implied upon you that you must support and defend the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. That is a constitutional requirement of all U.S. citizens, which is why all U.S. citizens now, even women, because Congress has expanded the role of the militia to include women, so all U.S. citizens must actually execute the laws of the Union or be willing to and capable of doing that, because that's a part of the oath. But the Muslim Brotherhood and all of Islam in the United States, when they raise their hand to actually, you know, abjure and basically denounce their allegiance to any foreign entity, sovereign or potent, and then they basically claim that they're going to support this Constitution over all things, well, they just perjured themselves, because they actually do not put the Constitution above the Quran as far as supporting the Constitution, and they try to inject Sharia law and laws that are absolutely unconstitutional, and they actually take measures that are directly violations of rebellion against the Constitution as well. And so your points on this Muslim Brotherhood, that I think you were the typical, you know, focus on the progressive media is to actually go after those who they deem a big threat. And you've always been a big threat to them. And so one of the things I wanted to point out is in that particular case, when we talk about the individuals of Islam, the Mohammedans who take an oath to become a citizen, that is a contract. They have made a contract, and by doing that, and actually by doing the things that they have done against the Constitution, they are violating that oath, and therefore I submit that they can no longer be citizens of the United States. And if you look at all of these other issues, from marriage law and injecting themselves into marriage, I should say, the legal process of injecting into marriage, marriage itself is a contract, and government came in to pervert that particular contract. When we look at this student loan issue, that is, again, as you pointed out, that's contract law as well. And so the government actually came in and attacked contract law again. And the same thing with the bailout. These companies did not have, I mean, based on the contract law, they should have gone bankrupt, but they didn't. And the government actually, you know, went in and perverted contract law once again. And same thing with the auto industry. As we look, they have actually been, and as a matter of fact, it's an evil society that when the leaders start to remove the consequences of sin, and society, civil society, is based on social compacts, and all of these things are social compacts, whether it be marriage or whether it be a financial loan or whether it just be your fundamental citizenship. These are social contracts, and we have turned our back, our government and those who are operating, not our government itself, but those who are operating in the government, have said, we're going to turn our backs on all of these things. And so this has been a very well orchestrated attack against our constitutional principles in so many different ways, and I could go through all of the warfare and so forth. But more importantly, one of the things that Congress, because I want to get to this January 6th thing, because I'd like your input and your views on this, because most people do not understand, even constitutional scholars don't really understand the Electoral College and how it's been violated and perverted since the Electoral College Act of 1870. And so they started going down this path of trying to rewrite and actually change the process of the Electoral College when we know they can't do that. That's why the 12th Amendment even exists, because if you look at the difference between the 12th Amendment and Article 1 or Article 2, Section 1, that it lays out how the Electoral College is to actually act, I mean, they actually changed these minor things within that one constitutional amendment because they knew they couldn't regulate it, and that's what they've been doing ever since. And what happened was 31 states under this umbrella of the pandemic and getting rid of the state legislators, 31 states violated the Constitution by changing the manner in how the people were to choose their electors. It's that simple. In other words, it created 401 unconstitutionally formed electors because these states, you know, deliberately subverted the policies and processes so that they could inject a voting system that would help them manipulate the outcome. And so what ended up happening was we had an unconstitutionally formed Electoral College, and Congress, their duty and responsibility is to ensure that the Constitution is being followed. And they never pointed out, and they should have stepped in even before the election, and they sat on their hands and did nothing. And so when the Electoral College sent their ballots in December, and then they were to receive these, Bob Schultz, myself, and a lot of other people petitioned them with First Amendment petitions, pointing out that this is an unconstitutional Electoral College, the first time in our history that this has happened in such a widespread manner, and that they have to actually reject the Electoral College and execute the 12th Amendment. And they didn't
And what you've just been describing is really the brilliance of what the founders did.
Yes.
Because you just described human nature and a perversion that each of the states wanted to utilize the Electoral College for their personal purposes.
Yes.
Not what was intended, but for what they wanted to politicize and have an outcome. We've been seeing that lately with the DOJ, Department of Justice, with the FBI on this raid on Mar-a-Lago. This is what human nature does.
Yes.
To take power that does not belong to them, but take it anyway in an unauthorized fashion, because human nature, bottom line, is that we want what we want. And we don't constrain ourselves from our evil impulses. That's all the Constitution was trying to do.
Right.
Because it understood that we were sinful man. We were not angels. And so we needed to constrain, even of the best of men, we needed to constrain the impulses. That's why they wrote down in the Constitution clearly the limitations upon power that government could have, so the bulk of the power would stay with the individual, so that we could truly be free men and free men, women, and have to pay for the consequences of our own action.
Right.
If you look at modern America in the last 60, 70 years, the whole story has been government trying to remove the consequences for bad behavior from individuals.
Absolutely.
That's it. I mean, yes. That is the story of what's happened in the last 60 or 70 years. That was not true under the Constitution. The Constitution said, you're big boys, you're big girls, you're going to pay for the consequences of your own actions. And I would say, i.e., one example is the student loan fiasco.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I just want to give one personal story. I came from a family that went to below poverty. We had absolutely nothing. And when I was in college, I knew I wanted to go to college. I worked my way through college. I usually had about three jobs at any given time. And I never even took a quarter in those days and put it in a pop machine to get a pop, because I just, every single dime I wanted to go to pay for my school. And I remember all these students that were taking advantage of different loan programs, and they would go down to Fort Lauderdale. They would go on spring break. They do all these things that I couldn't even imagine doing, because in my mind, I had to pay for everything. I had to live within my own means. I didn't have a mom and dad who were going to bail me out, or if I made foolish financial choices, would dig me out. I knew I didn't want to be in a financial hardship, so I just worked, only spent the money I had. That's not true. Now we're financing whatever desire a person wants. So they can sit in women's studies or diversity studies for years on end, and somebody else is going to pay that bill. That's what I say it has happened. That's gotten us to this point after 60 or 70 years of completely ignoring the Constitution. Not that it wasn't ignored in prior years, but we're now at a different level. So now we have the perverse results that we have to deal with.
Right.
But the Constitution was great. It's been perverted. Now we have an ignorant population, not because people are stupid, but because they haven't been taught the beauty and the essence of limitations on behavior.
Right.
And that's what the Constitution did. It did that to governments, which governments have the power to tax. The power to tax is the power to destroy. And so that's where we're at now, where Joe Biden just passed a $700 billion bill, but it also contains the biggest tax increase on the middle class. So in the middle of a recession, government again is choosing the absolute worst possible outcome. And that's what we're dealing with now, whether it's local, state, or federal. Our politicians are so deserving us, because they're serving themselves and their desire, their interest to stay in power. So they're serving themselves. They're certainly not serving us. So I appreciate the fact that you're trying to educate more people about the beauty. And that's what we need to focus on, the good, the true, the beautiful. And when you examine the Constitution, it really was a document founded in love, in the love and respect of each individual to be able to live according to their own actions in freedom, be they good or bad,
right,
and not to protect people from the unsoundness of unwise choices. So thank you so much for this time that we could have together, and thank you for educating your audience on these important issues.
So the one thing I wanted to ask, is I believe you can confirm this, is if we get two attorney generals to adjoin to this case, it forces the Supreme Court to actually take action on this, because I believe the United States, the people of the United States, need to see that the Supreme Court will turn their backs on this, because this case is different than every other case over the election, because all other cases were about election fraud or state problems, and the federal government does not have any jurisdiction over the state election problems, fraud, election fraud, what have you. And so the question is, am I not correct that if we actually got two attorney generals to champion and adjoin to this case, this would force the Supreme Court to actually hear this?
Well, I hope that will be the case. We've seen bizarre things happen in these last couple of years where we don't even recognize our nation anymore. We're lawless in so many ways. We've had good decisions come out of the Supreme Court, meaning not that I agree with politically, but the fact that they've actually observed the Constitution. I think the Dobbs case is a case in point.
Right.
And that's what was so highly unusual about Dobbs, because it was taking apart the unconstitutional basis of
right.
Roe versus Wade.
Right.
That's what I loved about that.
Right.
But that rarely happens, even with the current court. So
that's right.
I'm thankful for that. But I'm going to unfortunately have to leave now. But I thank you so much for this time. And perhaps we can do it again in the future.
I would love that opportunity. Thank you again for your time. And God bless.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So while you listened to that short conversation, as a matter of fact, hopefully we'll get back with the the good dean of, and as a matter of fact, it's Regents University. We didn't even get a chance to get into what she was doing and, you know, the good work that she's been maintaining. But bottom line, folks, if you understood what we're talking about, what I've been saying, and if you actually heard what Dean Bachman had stated, or Michelle, what she came right out and talked about, clearly she understands the Constitution, its design, its intent. And folks, you know, we were told and we've been given a self-governing system, but the self-governing system has nothing to do with democracy. It has everything to do with us having the inalienable right, basically preserved right there within the Constitution. It is galvanized and protected from us losing this inalienable right to petition our government for the redress of grievances, which is why we've been harping and teaching you about what a strong, and this, that one aspect of the Constitution, that inalienable right, the First Amendment petition, is such a strong tool that you will be blown away when you start realizing how we can start using this. But more importantly, let's focus on precedent, because that's what I really wanted you to think about. How awesome would it be to have a president actually talking and using and defending the Constitution? If we realize that as a president takes an oath to faithfully execute the laws of the land, the Constitution, and we're looking at so much unconstitutional government, that even though the president may not have the power to dispose of all of these unconstitutional things, they do have the power to constrain them from attacking the states. The president does have the power to basically shut down the IRS and say, you're not going to be enforcing these things because they are not within the law. And so what this president can do is basically undo what all of the progressives, all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt, have done in creating the SEC and creating all of these unconstitutional tentacles that have basically created these constraints and controls on every aspect of our lives, our economy, and so forth, where America could actually become free again. And when I mean free, I don't mean free without consequences. As we were just talking, as she clearly identified, it's almost like she read my book, that government has been working for over a century in trying to remove the consequences of sin. Abortion is an attempt, and government being involved in abortion was the initial intent of removing the consequences of sin. I want you to understand, folks, when government started going down this path of redefining in the Scopes trial, in the Negro Project of establishing Planned Parenthood, all of these types of things, these are exposing exactly what government and how evil government has been. I'm here to tell you, my friends, that when we have a true leader, a leader that is committed, ardently supporting the Constitution, you are going to see our liberties restored. You're going to actually see all of these petulant, you know, children, all of these people that believe that they're entitled to all this government handout and government protection, and they are going to have a tantrum. But bottom line, go read a very short book that I forget the guy that actually, Ken Blanchard, if that's the name. Ken Blanchard was a big proponent and actually basically went around and helped this guy because he knew the author in this, you know, helping people understand Who Moved My Cheese. It's a short book. Go read it and you'll understand that everybody, most all of these people will come to the point in their lives where they'll realize that that cheese, you know, the free cheese is no longer there. You're going to have to find cheese that you're going to have to earn. You're going to have to actually move. You're going to have to actually get into a point somewhere in our society where you're going to have to earn your cheese, because cheese does not fall from the sky in the desert like manna. God did that for Israel, and God will do those things for very specific purposes, but he will not do that because you're entitled. And so I want you to understand that having somebody in the Oval Office, somebody for 4 years to actually dismantle and allow the states to, you know, force the federal government into constraint. What happens when this happens, my friends? All the chains that the globalists have, the hooks in America, they will break. I want you to understand this. America will finally be free of this globalist agenda. I want you to understand that we've been going through these things for years now. I've exposed you to, you know, what we have to do to make elections local. All elections must be local. What we have to do to restore a Republican, American Republicanism and the Republican form of government, in getting all of these aspects of our government realigned so that they're functioning properly, and how to operate within these things. Tomorrow's Feedback Friday, so we're going to kind of dive into some Feedback Friday, and what we're going to do is we're going to prepare you for all next week and the following month or two, because we're going to be going through the Constitution from the beginning, from the preamble all the way to the 28th Amendment. When I say the 28th Amendment, you'll call it the 27th, and the only reason you call it the 27th is because the original 13th Amendment was obscured and removed unconstitutionally. We have all the evidence to prove this stuff, folks. We have the academic evidence to prove what your Constitution really is and what those lines mean. And so this is so important. I can't impress upon you, you know, how important these things are. But we're going to go through the Constitution. We're going to identify how it is being violated by the federal government and by the states. And what we're going to do is we're going to help you understand, because we're going to try to marry in these First Amendment petitions with the Bill of Rights for the 21st century, that document I went through back in April. We're going to kind of dovetail these things together so that you can start understanding why these things are important and why we have to start doing these petitions. Folks, we can do this. And as a matter of fact, if we act upon faith, just like the revolutionaries, just like the Civil War, when we start acting on faith, we will be blessed, because there's no doubt in my mind he wants us to succeed. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.